ever-changing world, Off Hollywood Media presents A Voice of Truth and Inspiration, resonating a vibration of love and understanding, illuminating new paths for new directions, as we, as one, strive for higher and higher levels of consciousness, always remembering life changes. And now, your host, our MC, our master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Ciao, everyone. Thank you, Mark, for that introduction, and I am happy to be greeting you all on this Monday, August the 2nd, for our 70th show, 70. That's pretty cool, and what's also cool is that we have my friend and our friend, friend of Life Changes, and a lot of you know him if you've watched us on YouTube before, because so much of what's on YouTube is because of him and Buzz Bros. So I say my friend, he's actually more like my uncle. And as a matter of fact, when I saw that he was going to be wearing a particular shirt for the interview today, I thought, I want to wear a similar shirt. I want to be matching Ken. So when you watch this video on YouTube, you'll be seeing we're matching in more ways than one. You know, actually, I was in the shower, which is going to bug Ken already has because, of course, I showered just before the show, and now I've got wet hair on the video, and he's like, can't you shower before? I did shower before. He's like, I mean, a lot before, because I don't like to use a blow dryer, and I like my hair to dry naturally. So it's drying naturally while we're doing the show. But anyway, I was in the shower, and I was thinking back. Well, actually, I was in the shower. I thought of a lot of things in the shower. That's what I do in the shower. I don't know about you all, but I think a lot. Sometimes I sing, but usually I think. In any event, actually, I think all the time. If anybody knows a way to stop thinking, which is what meditation and all that good stuff is supposed to be for, so I'm working on it. But in the meantime, I can't meditate in the shower, so I still think. Or maybe I could. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is that the drain was clogged. And so the water was filling up the tub as I was showering. And I take short showers, so I don't really use a lot of water because my showers are really short. And yet still, with the not too much water that I use, I mean, there was enough water in there to make Shamu happy for a day. I mean, for those of you who don't know, Shamu's a killer whale and who lives in a pool in different parts of the world, in theme parks. But anyway, it just was filling with water. And it made me think, do I ever stop and think how much water I really use when I'm showering? Or do we ever stop and think? And are we always grateful for stepping in the shower and being able to use that water? And because some people don't have water, period, much less running water in their house, much less being able to shower even for 5 minutes. So, and have it be warm for that matter. I mean, all these things I take so much for granted. And I was really grateful to be able to shower and have, the water filling up the tub, and grateful that I know that a plumber's going to come and clear. It's probably because I have long hair and the hair gets clogged up in the drain every couple of years, whatever. But so it made me remember of a story of a friend of mine who used to be a builder, which is interesting because our guest today, Ken, was and still is a real estate developer. But Ken does skyscrapers and those kinds of things, and this man used to do luxury custom homes. And I remember one day he got a call from a client for whom he was building a house, and the client wanted a shower that was a $50,000 shower head, a $50,000 shower head. So the shower head, what does a shower head do for $50,000? Is it all gold or something? And I remember it was a nice material. But the thing about the shower was that it covered the whole ceiling of the shower, and it rained water down as if somebody was in a rainstorm or something, which, frankly, it sounds pretty cool. And I can't wait till I can have the luxury of being able to buy a $50,000 shower. but also not buying the $50,000 shower. Because I wonder if there's a difference between affording and affording, in the sense that, sure, maybe financially someday I can, quote unquote, afford money-wise to buy a $50,000 shower head for my shower. But can the world afford? Can the people throughout the world, the earth, can the water from whatever city I'm living in at that time, can we afford to be making these kinds of decisions to have this big energy drain, water drain in our own bedroom when a lot of the world is suffering? I mean, I can't imagine if I was living in Las Vegas or something like that. If I were living in Las Vegas and I bought one of these things, it's like, what effect does this have on everybody else just because I can, quote unquote, afford it with money? That's, you know, starting to feel like it's not right. And I do want to have this conversation when I'm able to afford it, because I'm going to say that's what I want. Although someday that's probably not going to mean anything to me either, being able to have that kind of money, which is interesting, which is not what I was going to be talking about today at the beginning. But as life changes, this thing came up as I was in the shower getting ready for the show. What I actually did want to talk about is, a lot of you know that President Obama was on The View on July 29th. And The View is a television show that is four or five women that chat about all kinds of things. And they had the president on the show, the president of the United States, Barack Obama. So he said something that I don't know if a lot of people watch The View. I certainly don't, but this was brought to my attention. And so I went and saw the footage on YouTube. And the thing that came up was he said something that I don't know if, or I didn't know that, is perhaps something that's said. Now, let me say this. I used to work for IBM. Big Blue, it used to be called, it probably where blue chip stock came from, because it was one of the biggest company, top five at the time when I used to work there, and maybe even was bigger beforehand. And in the training, we were told never use buzzwords with our customers, because our customers won't understand the buzzwords, so it won't serve us any good when we're trying to explain something to them or sell something to them. And then there are some buzzwords that we want to keep within our own company. So don't talk about this or don't talk about that, because we haven't released that yet, for example. Another thing too is today I noticed that we had something going out that had our logo on it, which looks like a lot like the logo that we're actually going to use, that we have Will Works. Our friend Will Peterson is working on a really cool logo for us. And as we started to put something out today into the press, we realized that it had a semblance of our new logo and not our old one. And we aren't ready to announce our new one yet. So we pulled that and we said, no, let's not put that, because that's foretelling our new logo, and we don't want to make that announcement yet. So we almost made a slip up about our new logo when we weren't ready to announce it. So all that brings me to our president talking on The View, when he says, and I quote, and what is still true, when he was asked about racism, and what is still true, quote, is that there is still kind of a reptilian side of our brain, right? That part of our brain that is, that if somebody looks different, is that there is a part of us that is still, that is cautious, end quote. And he said that on The View, and nobody asked him what that meant. Well, first of all, what does that sentence mean, period? And secondly, a lot of people like ourselves here at Life Changes get criticized sometimes for saying things, talking about ETs or talking about reptilians and all that. Did I miss something? Was there a memo that went out? Are they teaching something else in school that said we come from reptilians, that we were first reptilians and then we became humans? And now President Obama is sharing with us something that we already all know, that we have a reptilian side of our brain. So first of all, since I never heard it before, I'm assuming a lot of people haven't heard it. So it's not a buzzword that everybody uses. So going back to my IBM analogy, if you're using, and IBM used to say this, if you need to use a buzzword, then make sure you explain it. Well, he used a word, then it needs to be explained. But further than that, this is a very meaningful word, because there have been conspiracy, quote unquote, theorists that have talked about reptilians running the world. And now the president of the United States says that we have a reptilian side of our brain, and that if somebody looks different, that part of us is cautious. The reptilian side of us is cautious. And nobody on The View said, could you explain that? Nobody, no, did they not hear it? Did they avoid it on purpose? And I haven't read too many things about it since. And I'm saying two things. Number one, if it's a buzzword, then somebody explain what it means to you. Because what it means to me is kind of scary. Because if all the crazy people, quote unquote, that I have heard talk about reptilians running the country and the world and what's going on, if they're really right, because the president of the United States is actually saying that they are, maybe making that connection, then we've got to look at something. Talk about life changes real quick here. And secondly, if it's more like my logo analogy, where they are saying something, which, because then it seemed like he kind of stuttered, which shouldn't have been said yet. Like some people are saying they're going to announce ETs, that the aliens are really here because other countries are already doing it, and this is the government that's going to make that announcement. Well, did we just hear an announcement that wasn't supposed to be made? That if maybe part of our brain is still reptilian, that maybe there are still reptilians on the planet? And who are they and what are they doing? And could there be any truth to what some of the quote unquote crazy people are out there saying? Which is interesting, because a friend of mine just turned me on recently to the movie They Live. I think the story was based on a short story written in 1963 or 64, and then it was made into a movie, I believe, in the 70s. And it's about that, about reptilians. The story was actually about reptilians, and the movie, they were kind of robotic or skeletally looking or something. But normal people couldn't see them until they wore a certain kind of glasses. And then they would see the reptilians. So this one guy in the story, at least, woke up and was able to see what was truth. Are we being shown what's truth right in front of our eyes? I don't know if I should be scared or skeptical, or I'd like to understand what this means. So somebody please explain. With all that said, my hope and trust is that the truth shall set us free, and that we're going to know what the truth is really soon. Now, I could go on and on and on with stories, but I'd like to introduce my friend Ken, who's actually doing what he always does, which is working with the camera and making sure that it works right and all that good stuff. And I'm just wondering, this is the first time we've ever done this where I've tried to get him in front of the camera, and here he finally is, and he's still working with the camera. So are we actually able to start the interview, or do you want a few more minutes?
We're not live on YouTube yet.
We're not live.
I'm making room for this amazing interview on the computer. I was sabotaging myself.
You're sabotaging. interesting. Interesting.
But I'm overcoming it right now.
Well, nobody twisted your arm. You know, when you came freely and happily.
Well, you could start with talking about my very boring background. I wouldn't probably put that on YouTube anyway.
You have a great story to tell, and there's nothing boring about it. But actually, I'll tell one more quick story that I was thinking about in the shower while the water was filling up my tub.
And my hair is drying as you speak.
And my hair is drying. So just as we're ready for YouTube, my hair will be dry and we'll be ready to go. But I was remembering also a conversation that I was having this weekend at a pool party, a friend of mine's going away pool party. And she had a lot of her friends there that I didn't know. But as I was there, and of course my feet were bare, a man actually said to me, "Oh, your heels are gross." And I'm like, excuse me?
Now, I'm looking at them, Filippo, and they look perfectly fine.
Okay, and actually there's a reason, and I'll finish the story. He says, "Your heels look gross." And I thought, excuse me? And I look at my heels, and I'm like, so what? They look like a man's heel. And he says, "Look at mine." Now, this is a straight man, because his girlfriend was there. I don't know him, but telling me that my heels look gross. And he says, "Look how cracked your heels are and callous. Yours should be like this." And his were really smooth. And somebody else, another straight man, chimed in and said, "Right, look at mine." And then somebody else chimed in, who I can't attest for their sexuality, the third one. But anyway, they were talking about my heels. Is this what we've come to? Is this what's important? And I looked at them and I'm like, I can't believe we're having this conversation. And one of them said, "Well, you should use a pumice stone." And somebody says, "Well, I use this pomade or her lotion or something." And I thought, oh, somebody get me away from here. So guess what I was just doing in the shower while the water was filling up my tub?
That's why the heels look so good.
That's why they look so good, is because I was using a pumice stone on my heels.
It's very good to have your feet pumiced up, I hear, if you have diabetes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because your feet get cracked and dry, and it's very dangerous.
Mine were cracked and dry. Who knows? Maybe I have diabetes.
No, you don't.
I can't imagine that I do, but we should have a diabetes specialist on the show and talk about that. But talk about life changes, the kinds of things people talk about these days. Now I know why I don't get out much. Anyway, I don't care what he says. I want to start talking about my friend earlier.
I'm enjoying being able to laugh when you make your comments.
Oh, that's right, because you're behind the camera trying to be quiet. Your job is to be quiet today. But today, actually, no, it's not. You know, this is a fascinating show to me because Ken has had such an amazing life already, and it's in so many ways, I feel like it's only just begun. Like this whole portal of energy has opened up. Actually, before I start introducing Ken, I'll remind everybody that you're listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network, and you can hear us every week on Monday night at 7 p.m. at lifechanges.ws, and of course, there you will find the portal to the BBS Radio Network, where you can hear us live. And if you miss us live or want to hear any of our past shows, you can go to our archive pages on lifechanges.ws. Of course, we're also available on Facebook and Twitter and actually, thanks to Ken Sheet and Buzz Bros on YouTube, etc. And so we'll talk more about what
it's
he does there.
Filippo Voltaggio on YouTube.
On YouTube, it's Filippo Voltaggio. And
so this is the man.
Voltaggio, because that's how Ken set it up. And, of course, I'm assuming people know how to spell Filippo, Filippo. Now, Ken Sheets, that's spelled Kensheetz, he enjoyed a successful commercial real estate career before becoming a filmmaker. Now, it's interesting because they're successful and they're successful. Well, he was responsible for over $1 billion worth of commercial real estate transactions, that including development of a 38-story, $162 million skyscraper, and Oprah Winfrey's $28 million Harpo Studios. Well, that was a few years back, so it would have probably been a lot more these days. And then he had, talk about life changes, a few life changes that led him here, and while being here in Hollywood, he became a Hollywood producer, director, writer, and he has a popular blog. What is the name of your blog? It's not on here.
7 years in Hollywood.
Oh, 7 years in.
Years is abbreviated.
7 years in Hollywood. What abbreviated how? YRS.
Yes.
7 years in Hollywood.
Blogspot.com.
He's written over a dozen screenplays, directed a national PBS show, was part of the 2008 election documentary that remains the number one DVD for its subject of kids and politics on Amazon, and has done over 100 short films. Now, I can go on and on, but basically the long and the short of it is that the mogul of real estate development became the mogul of Hollywood and media and social media. And the story in between, we finally got Ken Sheets in front of the camera to share with us. Welcome.
Yes, it's finally good to be in front of the camera.
How can I step in even closer? How's
all right,
that?
Sure.
Like your hat, by the way.
Thank you.
And how do you like that we're matching shirts?
I will share with you that there's a reason for the hat, but I feel more comfortable with it.
Hat or no hat, you look great.
Thanks.
And you know, this is one of the most amazing things about you. You are willing and able to share with everybody the story that has brought you to this amazing place where you are. And when you said that, I said, I wished one day that I could interview you about a year or so ago. And you said, someday, I'm not ready yet.
That's right.
And now you said you were ready. And I was blown away because I thought, how does that happen so quickly?
Mm.
But then again, so much has happened to you so quickly. First of all, you were in Chicago. You were building skyscrapers. You were the man about town. You were with Oprah, photographed with her and all the big shots. And you were honored.
I was James Bond in Chicago.
Yeah.
I had a beautiful staff of, you know, beautiful young people around me, men and women. And we were the creme de la creme of Chicago. I mean, I got Oprah's television studios by referral. People always ask me, how did you get the Oprah Winfrey studios? Well, I was just asked to build them. Yeah.
And you didn't say no, but absolutely.
No, I was thrilled. I mean, Oprah was and remains to this day the best client I ever had. I mean, she signs every check personally. That's one of the things she taught me about running a business.
Wow.
Always sign your own checks. Don't delegate that authority to a bookkeeper. Thank you, Oprah, for that piece of advice.
Wow.
That's not me any good yet. But.
Well, I'm sure did you good at some point, but that's interesting because what you just said is you alluded to something, and we're going to get there. So here you were, this man about town, and then you decided to move to Hollywood, or things started changing before?
No, there was the last President Bush, the first one, okay, who had a war going in Iraq, and the economy went into the dumpster, and the Sears company moved out of Chicago, emptying out the whole Sears Tower while I had a brand new office tower under construction.
Oh, wow.
And rents literally went from $24 a square foot to 24 cents a square foot overnight.
Wow.
It was a real estate depression worse than what the economy is experiencing with the residential real estate market by gobs. And
wow.
A lot of the banks went under at that point. I was the first in Chicago to have a building go back to the lender. But I was not the last. Every single building virtually in Chicago and all the major firms, you know, that own properties all went under. And I was just one of the first. Now, being the first, I took it very hard. I took it very personal. And I was an absolute bear to be around. And I wound up getting a divorce. We had put all of my assets into my wife's name before I started doing all these adventurous financial escapades. And, you know, I could have fought, you know, with her on that, but she wanted to keep them. And I was like, I was only 37 at the time, you know, when all this started to go sideways. I'll just go off and make another fortune. But what I didn't count on was how depressed I would be about the whole failure of this project in Chicago called One North Franklin, 38 stories, $162 million. I call it One North Franklin Stein. It came and got me.
You're talking $162 million project.
Yeah.
And
I had personal guarantees, you know, for performance and all kinds of things. And I didn't want my wife to have to be part of all that, you know, and so we parted our ways. She took all the assets and I took all the debts.
Whether you were the first to have this happen to or the last in your community, I'm sorry. I think this would have devastating effects on her.
I had a lot of anger, and I began, I guess, on my spiritual path at that point because I started doing a lot of psychotherapy. I did EMDR. I did meditations. I did all kinds of things to try to just get my head around this whole thing because I literally couldn't afford to go forward with the project. I was picked up by a major firm to be head of their corporate real estate department, a company called Lincoln Property. Run by Mac Pogue, who has got a tremendous attitude about, you know, about failure. And that's that until someone fails in real estate, they're not humble enough to be a developer.
Wow.
So it was a really great place.
So now you're really good. Fine.
I was in a great place. I rebuilt my fortune again. And then I got tired of real estate. I was just like, since I really couldn't find myself wanting to pull the trigger and develop again, after what happened to me, I was only doing consulting real estate. And I did the biggest telco projects. I did a 2 million square foot telecommunications facility. I did all these, brokered all these amazing transactions. But it wasn't the same thrill as creating a skyscraper or Oprah's studios. I had been to the top of the mountain there, and so I wanted to do something new. I had a fine arts education. I had wound up getting into real estate through being an interior architect and one of my clients hiring me to be into real estate. So I decided I wanted to find something that combined art and business. And really, you can't find anything better than the film business for that.
For you, especially.
Yeah, yeah, so.
Being creative as you are. So I didn't know this piece, actually. You were obviously at the top of the top in Chicago, and then you went down.
I didn't go, you know, like down to where I did though in this recession.
Right. So interesting. So then you started to creep back up, yeah, and you said you were close. Or?
Yeah, I went out and I raised money for the documentary, which aired as the lead into the presidential debates in 2000. That was my first film project. I mean, I was such a brat. I thought, well, this is what happens. You go out, you raise the money, your first project, and it airs as the lead-in to the presidential debates. It's so simple. That was where I went wrong. I mean, Hollywood is a really, really tough game. And there were so many times when I would have the money, but I didn't have the star, or I had the script, but I didn't have the studio.
Mm.
You know, you were talking earlier about, you know, a conductor. And that's what a producer is. He's like a conductor.
Not on the show, but beforehand.
Yeah, but beforehand.
Yeah.
A conductor brings all the elements together, and that's what a producer does.
Right.
And it's a skill that I mastered by making it smaller to the point where I could do lower budget things and get them done because I love to create things. And this whole thing where you go, if you listen to any DVD of any movie, you'll hear this horrible thing. Well, it took us 10 years to get this movie made. Well,
right.
You know, when you're starting a career in Hollywood at the age of 50,
you don't want to believe
that. You don't want to do that. You just don't want to do that. So I began learning how to edit and to film and to do all these things and got to be so good at it that it eventually led to the social media work I do today, you know, which we're seeing on YouTube right now.
Right. And so. Before we get to the social media part, there's just one little hump that I wanted to get through.
Oh, yes.
So
see, I'm avoiding this.
You said you wanted to talk about it. We don't have to.
Well, no, it's absolutely fine. I mean,
because you were up, you went down, you went up.
Last summer, I had been, of course, like I say, all my money for my film projects, which ran me out here for 7 years, came from my investor group in Chicago, who are all my buddies, one of whom owns the John Hancock Building. You know that big
story
building?
Sure.
That's Lee Golub, Hi Lee. There's Rick Cavanaugh, who has built buildings here in Los Angeles and Las Vegas and all over the world. There's Steve Fifield, who is just a genius, who built a building right next door to mine, 1 North Franklin, and we had the same footprint, and he always admired how we were able to build a bigger building because we did more work with the city on getting a better zoning. You know, but we had exactly the same stuff.
I'm getting it. You were a big shot.
Yeah.
So. You still are.
Well.
But that's the thing.
You know, what's cool about being a big shot is realizing it doesn't make you happy.
Now you've realized it.
Well, I realized it.
Oh, you realized it then?
I was miserable about it. I was like, I am a big shot, and I am miserable.
And the universe says, you think that's bad? Watch out.
Yeah, I'm going to show you what.
We're going to show you really miserable.
But, you know, I've never been miserable through all this. I mean, you've been kind of amazed by it, you know, because when the recession hit and all my buddies who are in real estate lost everything again.
As well, right.
And now they're restructuring and it's going to be great. And we'll be making movies again soon. I had not estimated how bad this economy was. I was a brat. Whenever I need to raise money, I'd call one of my guys, and within 2 weeks, I'd have the money. So I'm like, well, it's just going to take
more
time.
So you know people in Chicago, is it?
I know people in Chicago. Yeah.
And you really do.
It'd be nice. So anyway.
I don't know what you're referring to, but I'm always not. Okay.
Yes, you are, actually. You're great.
As are you.
So anyway, I said, well, it's just going to take me more time. But eventually, what I didn't realize is that it wasn't going to happen in this economy. The news about the stock market just kept getting worse and worse. So this is last summer. By the fall, I started up my social media company, and I thought, I'm just going to go out and get some big accounts. You know, I mean, I've done the world headquarters for Target stores and Toro's world headquarters, and I'm used to doing big corporate stuff and just having it happen. And social media is such a no-brainer in terms of its value. Well, even in this bad economy, the companies were very tight. I had a national restaurant company. I built Larry Levy's first restaurant. He does all the vending for, you know, Staples Center here and the stadiums all over the country. He had 600 restaurants. I thought that was going to be what would launch Buzz Bros.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and I'm still, you know, working to get that project launched, but they have not pulled the trigger yet, and I hope they will someday. So I had to go out and begin to get other jobs.
And
they were much smaller than I ever imagined they were going to be, you know, to get established.
So the money went down to absolutely
The money went down to nothing.
Nothing.
It went down to nothing. I was evicted from my apartment.
Here it goes.
And I lost my car, my little Volkswagen Beetle. And the worst part of it was that was all stuff. It didn't actually really bother me that much, although it was a lot of shame that I wasn't expecting, because I was like, I was thinking to myself, I'm in control of this. I'm going to let this eviction happen. That way, you know, my credit's already screwed, you know, from way back when One North Franklin went bad. It's never recovered from that. I mean, when you're, you know, $162 million in the hole, you're never going to really maybe financially climb out of that completely. But so I just thought I was controlling it, but And then I have to acknowledge, all right, I'm getting these smaller jobs. I'm going to need to find a roommate if I want to stay in Hollywood.
Mm.
And I began looking for roommates. I have one really nice guy, a stuntman, Gilly Gray, and his wonderful girlfriend, Kim, you know, I was with for about 60 days. Then they had to leave Hollywood because the business was drying up.
Yeah, this is not an uncommon story, but what's uncommon about this and why, besides what you have to share in just a moment with us, it's uncommon for people actually to talk about it at this stage of the game.
Sure.
Because when I met you, that's one of the things that just amazed me about you, is that you were down in the dumps. And as a matter of fact, you were so down, all you had was a bicycle that you could call your own.
Mm-hmm.
And one day you called me and you said,
someone stole the tires. I had locked it up outside the Orange Line and someone had stole the tires
and
the bicycle seat. I laughed.
And you were laughing.
I was like,
and I thought, the man isn't crying. He's either hysterically, you know.
Well, you just at a certain point, you got to laugh. You know, it was just like, it was so ridiculous. I mean, I'm sitting there I must have looked at it for 30 seconds just saying, are the tires actually on this bicycle?
This is not real.
I'm on a bicycle and someone's taking my bicycle.
Talk about kicking a guy when he's down. Okay, so.
Thank you, Los Angeles. Yes.
Well, you know, from where my understanding is that all of this is going, that
right.
this might have been your higher self saying, and now we're going to learn something different.
Well, I took it, I mean, if you look at a lot of spirituality, it's about giving things up. I mean, if someone becomes a monk, they're supposed to give up all their worldly positions.
Right.
Well, mine were taken from me.
Because you wouldn't give him up, really.
Because I wouldn't do it. So it was like pushing me on a path.
And you think you would have learned the first
time. And whose doorstep do I land on with for a roommate when Gilly has to leave town at the last minute? Is Bradley Quick. Your friend Bradley Quick and my friend Bradley Quick.
Yeah.
And that's how I met you, was filming Bradley Quick appearing on your show.
Oh, that's right.
And that's how I got to meeting you and how I got to doing Reiki and Dorothy Donahue's, your producer's fabulous Reiki class. I mean, if you guys are looking for an experience that is, you know, beyond imagination, you got to see their class and got to participate in their
energetic
class.
They made me
do it. All I wanted to do was film it, but they said, you're going to get more out of it if you're one of the students. I'm like, okay. And I found out I had all these sort of, well, of course I'm a visualizer. I visualize skyscrapers and corporate headquarters and all kinds of things and then manifest them into reality. So vision is a part of what
But you
I'm about.
Started to visualize things that I didn't expect you to be doing.
So, I didn't either, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about that?
I you know what? I do. However, there are even bigger things that you started to visualize after that. So so in the Energetic Alchemy course, you started saying you were seeing people in their past lives and this and that.
Yeah.
And you were starting to see beings and all that.
Well, it was amazing. That was my first experience with a group of people all meditating together in an energetic way. And we are energy. I mean, if you look at us, we're water, energy, and some matter in there somewhere. So what I was stunned by was when people would sit in the middle of your group and we would all concentrate our energies on
right.
them, I could see the energy like streaming towards them in these beautiful bands of color. You know? And it was just as real as my looking at you in this chair. And that was a total eye-opener for me.
Now, see, I can't do that, and so I was just
It manifests its way in different ways for different people. I mean, for you, it's your charisma, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
You have charisma.
Well, thank you, but I don't have charisma. I have charisma. Oh, anyway.
You're such a funny man. Okay, so that was your first experience, but you had many more, including...
And there were no drugs involved.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's what's amazing. Not that I've ever done drugs. I'm like a Boy Scout.
And see, that's what's exciting about me is here you are, like you're this. You don't take drugs. You're this man about town. I bet your friends think you've lost it.
Some of them do. But
you're seeing.
I was surprised.
Things.
I actually went home
talking energy
after a lot of this work, and I was surprised how many people back in Wisconsin and back in Chicago are actually very hip to the whole Reiki thing.
You know,
one of them criticized me and said, "What do you think we are, cave people back here? We understand Reiki."
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, help us understand.
That's Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth.
Help us understand something. You had a vision. So here you are. You've come all this way.
Yes.
And you had to hit bottom, and through that you've learned certain things that you.
Well, I learned in your class how to. It's just like the stuff you see in Kung Fu to, you know, make an energy ball like that. And to me, it was the earth. Isn't that interesting? It was the earth made out of liquid, though.
Interesting.
And I could, you know, move that over people. And it was very healing. I put the earth, water, energy over you, and it's just, you know, you're clean.
Wow.
And, you know, it's good. It's good stuff. So there I am in Italy. I through Bradley Quick, my client for the Cool Change Foundation, wonderful charity work that we're doing for them, I meet Connie Miller from Soul Drama. And Connie has this amazing combination of energy work and spirituality and what's called psychodrama, which has been around for 80 years where people take the roles of each other's family members. And I've never done group therapy, so this was group therapy. And again, the client asked me to participate, you know, in order to film it. We didn't film any of the sessions, but we would do interviews afterwards with people because it's a very private thing when you're going through your big family stuff. So, and then Connie had a special treat for us. We were in Santa Maria del Sol, which is a treat enough, and it's a beautiful resort in the Puglia, Italy, sorry.
You asked the right person.
Thank you, yes, Mr. Voltaggio.
I have friends in Italy.
Yes. So I was in Puglia, and that's the heel of the boot, and we're at this amazing resort, which is a yoga meditation resort, and the group was treated to the healer of Santa Maria del Sol doing a group healing over us. Mm-hmm. Now, Julia is a really powerful, energetic healer. She doesn't even call herself that. She doesn't know quite what to call herself. Mm. But she's one of the most powerful healers in Italy. And she's the resident healer at Santa Maria del Sol. So we all lay down in this big yoga hall, which used to be a horse stable. It had these yellow brick ceilings, beautiful white walls with arches on the side. I mean, Italian architecture is one of my favorites as an architectural buff, I gotta say. And we laid down on the maple floors on these yoga mats. Now, I'm not a yoga guy, so right away I'm like, how am I gonna lay on this floor? It's so hard, even with a mat, you know, so I'm laying down. And Julia begins to chant over us in Italian. And like most Americans, I just speak English. You know, we're all cavemen to the rest of the world most people speak 3 to 5 languages, you know. So there I am. I don't understand a word she's saying, but she's just, it's very beautiful. It's not a song. It's not like a poetry reading. It's like nothing I've ever heard cadence-wise.
Okay.
It's chanting, I guess, but it's not chanting. I'm listening to this, and I begin to relax and meditate. And I'm sort of, you know, there's some people in this group who are always late for everything we do for the whole week.
Okay.
I don't know what their story is. You know, they're never there on time. So I'm kind of laying there annoyed that the group is not whole. There's like 20 mats, and some are empty. All of a sudden, I see celestial beings come down.
Uh-huh.
You know, one is right next to me.
Now, you have your eyes closed?
I have them open from time to time. And closed.
Really?
Yeah, open and closed.
So you saw them with your eyes open?
I saw them with my eyes closed and open, if you can quite get that.
Okay.
Like, you know, there were times I had my eyes open, and I would close them, because I would open them to see, am I really seeing this?
So celestial beings, like...
But like they were bluish. You could call them an ET almost too.
Wow.
You know, I mean, I had the feeling they were extraterrestrial.
Okay.
And that they were simpatico with me, and that they were going to help me with this vision. But that was the immediate sense that I had.
Okay. Okay.
So that's remarkable enough, right?
Yeah.
As they laid down, then their blue energy sort of ran through all of us. We were all connected like a grid.
Wow.
And it was at that moment that the gold bricks of the ceiling, which were just yellow gold, became actual solid gold.
Mm.
And they sort of crackled with like an electrical energy, like a superconductor almost.
Wow. You know?
And the floor, the maple floor we were laying on, turned clear. It was like, it wasn't glass. It was like some kind of super plastic. And we were, you know, embedded into that as part of the circuitry that we were.
You know, I could totally say you were weird right now.
I know.
But I've heard stuff like this before from other people. And so how can everybody be have the same experience? Okay, so the floor turns to glass.
Yeah, and then the room has become mirrored.
Plexiglass.
It's like the room is now a cylinder. And all of a sudden the ends of the room just burst off and begin expanding. And I could see it expand. Now, this I'm seeing in my mind's eye, of course, because I wasn't in outer space.
Right.
But I could see it very clearly with my eyes closed. That's what I mean sometimes is eyes closed.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see the energy going back all the way around the world. So this band that was the room, with all this golden supercharged energy powered by this grid of healers. These were all healers from all over the world. They were from Greece. They were from Brazil. They were from America, and they were from Italy, and they were all, you know, taking the soul drama class to become better healers back when they went back to their own countries. So, you know, I've never had an experience like this. I mean, to be connected to a group of healers like that, who I had so much regard and respect for, and then Connie Miller, who's an amazing intuitive healer of herself, plus Julia, something really happened.
So there was a band that went around the earth, the
North
circumference.
South. Okay. By the way, I took your, I had your compass with me that you gave me as a little gift. This is a tripod that Filippo gave me. A camera mounts onto this.
Because you always have a camera in your
hand. It has a compass on it. And so I took the compass out later after, you know, I went back to the hall, and I it was north and south that the energy was running, so I calibrated it with your compass.
That's so cool.
Love that.
My compass in Italy.
Your compass made it to Italy.
And part of the story. All right. And then there was another band, was it?
Well, then, remember the arches from the side of the room? Those all blasted out as well.
Okay.
And that went east and west. So we had a cross, essentially, of energy going east and west around the world.
Yeah.
And north and south. And after I talked, Julia started to wind down the vision at that point. And the assistant said we could sit up, and I just went, wow.
Mm.
And Connie Miller, who was sitting right next to me from Soul Drama, says, "Wow, what?" And I wasn't even ready to talk about it yet. Mm. I was like, wow, you know, it was really cool.
Just wow for
you. I was like, if I talk about this, I was like, people are going to think I'm crazy, you know.
Yeah.
So later on I did, though, and I talked to a few of the students and asked them if they had had any experiences like that. Were there angels? You know, did you see the room become a giant energy band around the earth? And they just smiled at me and said, "No, I fell asleep," one of them said. And I could hear that guy snoring, so... He wasn't lying.
You know, what's interesting is when you shared to me that story to me, I don't remember if you were still in Italy and you emailed it or you sent me a video or something. And what I knew that you didn't know, because I know you weren't keeping up on some of this stuff at the time, that there was actually, in that period, an energetic, I was reading about this stuff, saying that there
this
was energetically a cross that was being formed around the earth of energy. And I thought, he's seeing it.
I was there.
And I knew you didn't know.
I was
know.
Inside the cross.
You didn't know.
And I thought when someone asked me, I said, well, I think what the vision means is that it is the internet connecting Santa Maria del Sol to the world. But if you think about an X, it doesn't make a lot of points of connection on the planet, right?
Yeah. There's a lot more than that.
So that a few nights later, as we're reaching the end of that, I was in bed, just sort of half asleep. And then I had the vision of the energy bands again, the cross. And I could see them begin to turn on each other very slowly with like a groan that was like trumpet sound. It's like this mighty echoing.
A sound even. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was just like, and I thought, wow, that's kind of cool. And then they just began to accelerate faster and faster and faster, north, south, east, west, until they were a shield, which is what I've named the Dream Shield. With my vision. Yeah.
Now, it's
and interesting. I was going to interrupt you one more thing, though. I was told that's what this is. This is about making a gentle 2012. This is not the voice in my head, sort of my soul, if Connie Miller activated my soul voice, was saying, this is not social media. This is bigger than that.
Right. This is just, I was just about to ask you, you posted a funny blog post today. It's funny to me because you wrote, "Sorry, Mayans and ETs. 2013, here we come."
Right.
All right, so exactly. That's really your message. What does that mean, actually, in the next couple minutes that we have left here?
It means that we're going way past 2012. You know, all this doom and gloom, the end of the Mayan calendar, we're just going to breeze. It's going to be very gentle. When I talked to Julia about the vision, the big surprise for me was that this is exactly what she was hoping for in running the vision. Was that we would usher in a gentle 2012. So,
and the one guy who didn't want to do it, who just wanted to film it, was the guy that...
Sounds like a screenplay, doesn't it?
Right. I'm sure you've written it already.
No, I haven't.
Your whole
I'm
life,
living it.
Yeah, your whole life is a screenplay. So, So, in other words, did any answers come as to why the hurricanes and all that, in your opinion, won't happen? Like, did we do enough penance, so to speak?
Well, we've been given some more time, and I asked how much time we've been given. And we've been given about 50 years, according to this vision, to get our shit together.
Really?
It's
okay.
It's not like, you know, it's all good roses forever. You know, there are intelligent forces in the universe that are watching us. And, we've got another 50 years.
Are they laughing or they think we're idiots? What are they?
No, they've all been through it. I mean, you know, they've all evolved to where we are. And, you know, we're going to make it. You know, they were pleased, if you will, the ones who participated with us.
Okay.
That we have enough goodness in us, enough light in us to power a vision like this. And I was told... in my after visions, because Julie told me there would be some, that October 10th, which is 2010, at 10:10 and 10 seconds after the hour, both AM and PM, whatever time zone we're in,
right.
And if you believe in this vision, you'd like to see, you know, send a signal that we, you know, we really deserve this next 50 years, that we are supposed to do something on October 10th.
And the great thing is that you don't know what that is, and you're okay with that.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I was like, what should it be? And it sort of came back to me, whatever you think it should be.
Well, actually, it'd be interesting to hear what people think it should be.
Yeah, that's,
and for
the,
people
that's
to comment.
The beauty of it. It's a participatory thing.
You started a blog on this, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, okay. I've got a blog going on it.
Where is that?
The blog is at 7 years in Hollywood.
Okay, so the number 7?
The number 7.
YRSHollywood.blogspot.com.
Yeah, 7 years in Hollywood.
Oh, in Hollywood, excuse me. And also, of course, Buzz Bros.
Yeah.
BUZZBROZ.com.
Yes.
So for the time being, those of us who rely on your wonderful buzzing ability, you're still going to be doing that, but you're working, of course, on a much, much bigger vision here. And
I see it as all part of the same thing. I mean, this all began, you know, with you and Dorothy. That's part of the path, you know. I mean, we're all, if you think of the internet, it's just a miracle. And the fact that it's free, isn't that kind of strange? Considering what a world we've been in?
Mm. Where everything is about money and all of a sudden things are not.
Well, there's this amazing thing.
Yeah.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy. And that's one of the main reasons why it was so great to, you know, Dorothy said, we got to get Ken on the show. I'm like, I've been wanting him on the show forever, but he doesn't want to talk about, you know. She's like, he wants to talk about it. Make sure he wants to talk about it, because this is craziness that, you know, you come.
Well, I think it's good for people to hear how grounded I am.
And that you're a regular person.
Yeah, how outlandish this vision.
You haven't, you didn't say, oh, as a child, I used to see blue people or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you didn't say, you know, this is a regular guy or not so regular who's done some amazing things. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden, in a short period of time, you're starting to see things and feel things and know things.
But actually, as a child, I did see things.
Oh, really?
And I was, you know, suppressed by my family, my grandmother. Who told me I had an overactive imagination, which is how my production company got its name, Overactive Imagination Pictures.
Okay. It sounds like we need a whole other show on that one.
Yeah.
Ken, this has been great.
All right.
This has been so great. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for filming it.
Can I go back behind the camera now?
You can go back behind the camera, where you really belong in front. But in the moment, we need Dorothy Lee Donahue in front for the segment we call How to Be the Change.
Well, it's really change yourself, change your world.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'll get it for next time.
This is exactly what April Evans is attempting to do. She gave up her dream job because of her convictions and her beliefs that animals should be treated ethically. I want to share her story with you tonight, as told by Eric Berger in the Houston Chronicle on July 29th. 2010. April Evans resigned from her position as leader of a team of aerospace engineers at NASA after her concerns about radiation experiments on monkeys went largely ignored. Now she's working to halt the tests while trying to get by without an income. Growing up in Lake Jackson, Texas, April Jean Evans recalls sitting on her grandfather's lap, watching space shuttle missions on TV, and going outside to look up at the stars with him. There was never any doubt, she says, that she wanted to work for NASA. Evans, 32, reached that goal after graduating from Texas A&M University, and her career remained ascendant until she learned of the space agency's plan to irradiate monkeys as part of a $1.75 million experiment. Scientists want to assess health risks astronauts will face from radiation when flying beyond Earth's orbit. I began to feel guilty that I was part of an organization doing this, she said, after finding herself unable to file a formal complaint about NASA's participation in the experiment and non-productive discussions on the ethics of the research with her superiors. Evans resigned in April of this year as leader of a team of engineers working on the International Space Station. I had the coolest job in the world, Evans said, with construction nearly complete. This was going to be the golden decade for the space station. It was also such an exciting time for me, and it was almost impossible to walk away. But walk away she did. Evans said she has never been an animal rights activist. She said she didn't even know about the monkey experiments until January, when people for the ethical treatment of animals protested outside the Houston Space Center. Nevertheless, she recently connected with both PETA and Animal Defenders International, which opposed the monkey experiments, and the two organizations encouraged Evans to tell her story. NASA can ill afford to lose gifted people like April Evans, who sacrificed her lifelong dream to speak out against animal abuse and backward-looking science, said Kathy Guillermo, PETA's vice president and of laboratory investigations. Of course, NASA defends testing. Radiation exposure is one of the greatest hurdles NASA faces in pursuing long-duration spaceflight beyond Earth. The space agency says the experiments involving as many as 30 squirrel monkeys are critical to safeguarding the lives of astronauts during missions to Mars or other long-duration destinations in the solar system. On Earth, we're protected from most of the space radiation by the Earth's atmosphere and magnetic field, explained Michael Brockes, a NASA spokesman. The types of radiation and the doses to be encountered in space are well understood. However, because cosmic rays are a different type of radiation compared to radiation on Earth, such as X-rays, the potential health risks to astronauts are not well understood. By understanding how radiation affects the cognitive and motor skills of intelligent monkeys, NASA plans to develop biological countermeasures to the risk. Evans worked at NASA for 9 years, spending time supporting efforts to construct the space station and later leading a group that ensures various spacecraft that visit the station, including vehicles from Russia, Europe, and Japan, can do so safely and without compromising the station's large array of solar panels. She believes NASA should be conducting research in preventing radiation from entering space capsules rather than mitigating it after the radiation has already reached astronauts. Since leaving her position at NASA, Evans has devoted most of her time to building support for an international treaty that would ban primate experiments for the purpose of space exploration. Already, the European Space Agency has adopted such a position, with Director Jean-Jacques Dordain stating in an April 1 letter that ESA's formal position is, there is absolutely no research interest in planning for experiments with primates. Such is Evans' aspiration that all space agencies would adopt a similar position, but there's also the real-world issue of no longer having a regular income. Since leaving NASA, Evans has moved into her brother's spare room. She's also falling into debt. I've dedicated myself to trying to stop these experiments, she said, but at some point, I've got to find a way to pay for my car. I know I need to make a living, but it's hard for me to think about that because I never expected to be working anywhere but NASA. So, dear listeners, if you have any ideas as to where this courageous young scientist might find a job and or would like to thank April for making the toughest decision of her life, you can contact her by writing the author of this article, Eric Berger. His email is eric.berger@cron.com. That's eric.berger@cron.com. I know that this good karma, with this good karma, she will find something soon. Until next week, please remember that you are the power in your world, and you are the guru you've been waiting and looking for. You're the only one who can end your suffering, and you can only do this by beginning a love affair with you. So let us choose to become very conscious co-creators by making elegant choices such as April Evans has done. And let us never forget that we are powerful beyond imagination and that we are love, We are lovable, and we are loved.
Wow. Thank you, Dorothy, for that segment, How to Be the Change or something like that. I said I'd have it for you next week. I don't have it now. But with that, I want to remind everybody that you've been listening to Life Changes with Filippo. And I am Filippo Voltaggio, and I am proud to have been of service by hosting Life Changes with Filippo tonight. I want to thank our guest, who is also a sponsor of this show, Buzz Bros, and, of course, Ken Sheets. Thank you so much. I salute you. I salute you from behind the camera. I'm saying you're sponsored because you're filming it and you're putting it out there, and you do so much for us. So we appreciate you. So I'm putting it out there like that. I, along with our segment hosts, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and producer for that matter, and Mark Lejeur, and our engineer, Seth Hendrick, thank you for joining us and being part of this world, part of this show, and part of the change we all wish to see in the world. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes. Join us here every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and visit us on the web at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. And follow our community on Facebook at Life Changes with Filippo. Join us here next week as we consciously embrace and explore the only constant, life changes.